1 minute warning.
We're running your reg.
If folks could start moving to their seats. As soon as Dr. Kearns takes his seat, we'll be ready to begin.
Thank you, sir. May I have another?
It's no fun if we don't have our human piñata at the table.
Good man.
Well, welcome back. We are now going to shift to discussing Regional Emergency Medical Care Systems Guiding Principles. And again, Dr. Kearns, I believe we have some opening remarks or presentation. And again, thank you all for your attention today and your diligence. If we do finish a little early, I don't think it will be a tragedy, but only if we have exhausted this topic and exhausted our sponsors.
As a measure of efficiency, we will pick up where we were. And again, this is all in the draft report. We now move into this other key theme. We talked about definitions, we talked about domains, and now the framework guiding principles. So the following principles are overarching themes that are intended to provide direction to the standard implementation of the regionalization of emergency medical care services framework and future development of measures and measure concepts within regionalized emergency medical care services. Next slide. So here's the first proposed guiding principle. Regionalization of emergency care is a method of matching resources to needs in a timely fashion with the goal of improving patient-oriented care outcomes. Regionalization does not equal centralization of care. Next slide. Number two. The effective utilization of regionalization concepts cannot occur without addressing potential structural deficiencies in the emergency healthcare system, such as ED boarding, ED crowding, and EMS diversion. Next slide. Three, identifying and evaluating measures of whole systems of emergency care is difficult due to the immature development of these systems. Measurement of regionalized emergency medical care services should strive to effectively measure system components as well as the system as a whole. Four, measures used to judge the effectiveness of a system should include patient-oriented outcomes. Five, System evaluation should promote shared accountability for the system's successes and failures across units of service within the system. Six, the development of regionalized emergency medical care services is an ongoing process with continually changing structure and process elements. Valid system-level measures should detect and recognize improvements, or lack thereof, due to changes of a system's component parts and the communication and coordination between them. And that's it. So, Andy, I don't know if you wanted to go through each of these principles, if there's any value in doing so.
Are these, do you know what pages these are in the handouts, by chance? 13?
Yeah. Chuck, I would suggest we go back and we'll just go through each of these one at a time. And if you've got your handout, you should be able to pull them up.
So in the document, it's our page 13 of the framework report draft, but number 25 of the pages of the materials you've been given.
Any comments on suggested modifications to principle number one? We can circle back to it. We're on number one.
I was really pleased to see number one, and regionalization does not equal centralization, because particularly safety net hospitals and public hospitals end up bearing the brunt of this idea. I mean, just because, you know, they have docs in-house, when the sun goes down, they become the regional experts on everything. So mitigating against that's very important.
That being said, we probably should define it. I mean, I've seen this now happen a lot of times, you know, after this was pretty prominent in the regionalization workshop from the IOM. Is centralization defined somewhere?
No. In the Kellerman dictum. I mean, I think that's one of the things this group could define as the differences, and distinguish the differences between regionalization and centralization. Okay, so the concept here.
I think I understand it, but I guess I think that other people are going to be reading this, and we might need to give a sentence or two. I mean,
it's a great point, Brandon. And you know, honestly, you know, one of the issues that comes up just as background is that the idea of centralization, as John pointed out, is frequently confused. You could be the focal point for all care. You could be the focal point for emergency care. You could be the focal point for specialty care. But the purpose of regionalization might be to create a system and where there's, for lack of a better word, a rational, planned approach to the care of patients across a geography or a population with the goal of improving their outcomes, as we discussed earlier, for time-sensitive, life-threatening care. And that would definitely distinguish a centralization concept from a regionalization concept. Yeah, which should be unselected, not planned, not defined for conditions with a specific patient-oriented outcome in mind. That may be one compare and contrast between the two.
Dr. Mayer. Just given the opportunity to flog it worse again. On one, which is one of these difficult paradigms of a vertically integrated horizontal system, I think one allows you to deal with what we were discussing earlier, and that is that on the horizontal part, you have the standards of what a regionalized care delivery system should be, regardless of the disease. while allowing the disease-specific vertical integration to utilize the same baseline standards, but then to become potentially unique to the institution and or the disease to allow it to be even more robust. And I think approaching it that way with the baseline standards that all components, and regardless of what you focus on, whether it's cardiac, stroke, trauma, are held to with a fiscally feasibility attended in large degree to allow consistent recording and monitoring, and then to allow for specifics based by disease and not all institutions being necessarily involved with each disease can pull that out and look at their own outcome standards on top of that.
That work for people? Well, good. Dr. Mayer's out for the rest of the afternoon. Sorry, don't see any signs over here. Shall we move to number two?
What's actually happening now in Southern California is that the trauma centers are de facto regionalized care centers. And so just about anything that comes up is sent to the trauma center to take care of. And so that, in effect, is happening right now, at least in that part of the world. And it appears to be a situation where primarily unfunded patients are sent to these trauma centers to be taken care of. And the guise that's used to refer patients is to refer to a higher level of care as defined by EMTALA. And that so far has been the standard operating procedure for lots of hospitals in Southern California.
So you're saying in lieu of regionalization, you have a centralized system that's centralized based on economics?
It seems that way.
And I think your colleague on the other side of the table had pointed out that these cases all tend to show up more often after hours.
Well, sure, after 5 o'clock in the evening and all day Saturday and Sunday.
Okay, shall we go to number two? Leading off, Chuck, in number two thoughts. One would be possibly somewhere slipping in the word monitoring, because if we don't monitor these issues, we don't know that they're happening. And the other, which sort of speaks a bit to Dr. Kusky's comment a moment ago and to Dr. Fowles in the break, is in addition to boarding, crowding, and diversion, the fourth issue I think we are seeing more and more is on-call or gaps in on-call coverage, either because there aren't enough specialists or the specialists aren't willing or able to take after-hours calls, so you might want to add that as well. Again, back to a system may be capable but not have the capacity for any of several different reasons.
With EMS staffing be a component, I'm not sure if there's geographic variation to that, but I know in rural parts of our state where it's a challenge because of the lack of paramedics. I'm not sure about nursing shortages, if that's still an issue in some other areas as well.
Yeah, I agree with your comment about on-call. I'd actually change the wording a bit from my perspective, access to appropriate consultation, because things like radiology, you know, can be, and other things can be solved electronically. And just that also allows us down the road to go straight from EMS to consultation.
Good point. Yes, sir.
Well, there's one more point to make, and that is that if a hospital has a specialist on call and that specialist won't respond for whatever reason, that technically is a violation of EMTALA. But CMS then looks at that as a deficiency in that hospital and requires that the hospital, such as a hospital that has the capability, has to take the patient. So that there is a legal aspect to this as well, which sets up that transfer because of EMTALA. Yes. If you were a physician, say a specialist on call at Harborview, and you knew that some other hospital in your area had specialists that could take care of the problem, but they had refused to come in to see the patient, and the patient was referred to Harborview, you might be upset by that because they didn't show up. The issue is that when that happens, CMS views that as a lack of capability of the hospital that the patient was initially referred to, and so they think then that the hospital such as Harborview has to take the patient because they have the capability and the other hospital doesn't.
I'm sorry. So your proposal would be?
Well,
I mean, it happens all the time. You're right. I mean, that's for half my patients. That scenario. I mean, I'm well used to it. But I mean, what would you propose to get out of it?
I think it's an education issue. I think that the hospitals that are receiving these patients need to have more contact with CMS to define how they're being treated. If they don't, actually, it's a violation of the law on their side if it's a lateral transfer. So they need to report this more often. And I think this is just a matter of education more than anything else. I'm not sure that all the administrators are aware of that aspect of the regulation.
Well, in a magical, truly regionalized system, you might be able to identify that Hospital B seems to only transfer patients after 5 o'clock, weekends and major holidays, or during the day when they're uninsured. And those patterns would be readily discernible over time if we were truly sharing data and managing. If it's a one-off, it's a one-off and no one ever notices. So, again, part of our idea is if we identify important data to collect and understand to see about the quality of the system, it can actually make the system better, more accountable. Dr. Fowles and Dr. Fine.
Yeah, just to follow on, what you just described was a system where in advance you decided what the rules are, you monitor them, there is an enforcement arm, there's authority. In regionalization, as you know, can occur without that thought. One of the best examples I'm trying to resolve right now is on hand surgery and replantation of hands. And if the only guy in the state is on his annual vacation with his family, then they don't have it and it has to go out of state or somewhere else. It finds a region, but nobody planned it that way.
Just the way that number two is written, so addressing potential structural deficiencies in the emergency healthcare system, such as boarding and crowding. I mean, in a lot of areas, crowding could be a demand issue. That the structural deficiency is not in the emergency care system, but it's in the wider healthcare system. So I don't know if we want to go into that at all, or have that discussion. I mean, if one of the reasons for boarding and crowding is that we're, you know, that primary care docs are just referring their patients in and not seeing them.
My personal sense is if we're paying attention to proximate complicating factors, that's realistically probably as far as we go, unless we want to manage the entire healthcare system of the country. But I think my sense of this one, Chuck, is your intention is to say that we do live in an imperfect world, and these are important factors in terms of timely access, immediate access to care that need to be taken into consideration.
Indeed. It came out of a discussion. One, it's a recognition that this system has challenges. Number two, that it doesn't exist as a system, really, and that this one of the things we need to do is to start making it a system. And then number three, when you start looking at what the components of the system are, that there are challenges both at the unit of service level, but also that interfere with the interaction of the units of service to provide timely, life-saving care for illness and injury.
Any other comments on principle two? Yes, here and then here.
One could say this is cause and effect, and you could say that the inefficiencies or the deficiencies could be caused by lack of regionalization, so that if we were regionalized and efficient, we wouldn't have as much boarding or crowding or diversion. So I don't know if it makes it redundant or is appropriate as it.
So I think it's an interesting hypothesis. I think that we won't find that out until we do it, But I think that clearly we have unstructured patient resource matching going on right now. And so this would clearly be an approach to a structured matching of patients and resources. And again, I like that distinction we made between capability, capacity, and access. I think that that's one way to think of it.
Gary?
From the rural perspective, boarding, crowding, and diversion aren't major issues. We pretty much take care of what comes in. But I was wondering if we could add a few words in between such as and boarding that might get at what Alan said and what the rural issues are, and that's lack of paramedics, mid-levels, and physicians. Many of the emergency rooms in our state aren't staffed by physicians anymore. It's all mid-levels. Some of them have telemedicine support and some don't. But those are the issues that we struggle with. Vast parts of the state don't have paramedics at all.
I wince at the term, but provider shortages or something of that sort would get at that in a generic way that encompasses, yeah, workforce shortages. Yeah. Dr. Files, you were waving your...
Just to say on number two, you said it much more eloquently, but to revert back to the FAA analogy, there's no air traffic controller. There's nobody who's matching the system's capabilities with patient flows and keeping an eye on things. So in real time, there really is nobody overseeing the system.
That's an interesting point. I think that you've taken it one step up, and that is there was some discussion of guidance, and there was some discussion of policy implications. And I think that it's an interesting point, and it may be valuable for the group to highlight that.
Related to crowding and diversion is the holding of ambulances, unable to offload. It has its effect on the ability of the system to continue to respond both in the urban and the rural areas, and it's probably something that could be added. It would be great.
I do think as a collective group, we come up with the most trivial terms to describe the most serious behavior. I think many people call that parking. Kind of like boarding, it sounds sort of like no big deal, but yeah. Dr. Martinez.
Well, I was going to support the wording here in a way because he asked the question about boarding and should we include that? And the answer, I think, is yes, because that's the process measure, right? You can put your structure in, but if it doesn't affect these things, then you, perhaps the way it's working or how you're doing it in terms of a process is not giving the outcomes that you want. So I like these ideas of having linkage to the fact that we'll create these programs and this will be the starting point. And as you build the program and you move into its performance, you should see these disappear.
Yes, Harv.
Not meaning to open up a can of worms here, but what, me? Yes, John says. I do think that as much as your point, Art, about not taking on the entire healthcare system is true, we all recognize that there is a rate-limiting step at the back door of the emergency department in terms of getting patients upstairs, and that seriously limits capacity. There are many reasons for that, as you know far better than I. But I think that that's a point that somehow has to be, touched on in this analysis. If that issue isn't fixed, the throughput problems are going to continue, the boarding continues, the diversion continues, all of those issues continue. And since what we're fundamentally about is ensuring access, capacity, and capability, for folks who really need emergency care, I think that does have to be addressed somehow.
Well, I think we talked in the previous discussion about inpatient care as one of the domains, and three cheers to NQF for now starting to ask for measurements of things like time to a bed and throughput time in emergency departments. Although one knows you can hide a lot of mischief above or beneath the median, nonetheless, it's a start. But,
well, I guess I'm suggesting that something should be added to this list to reflect that. I'm not sure what the wording might be. I'll leave that to smarter people than me, but I think something has to be mentioned.
Other comments? Shall we move to three? No, we're staying on two for a moment.
Just a quick comment.
Yes.
We're using lots of terms that are common to those of us here at the table and to those of us who do healthcare on a routine basis. Boarding, crowding, diversions, the throughput is a good way of putting it, patient parking. Are we going to have a composite glossary or some appendix where these things are defined and it's not within the main body? But I mean, this is going to be a document to inform policy and decision makers who don't know these terms probably as well as we do. So I assume we're going to pull some of these buzzwords out into a glossary or something for other folks to be able to interpret this correctly.
Yes, that's right. We want to make sure that it reaches as general an audience that's interested as possible. So we will work on beefing up the glossary with terms that are overly technical or emergenese or whatever you want to call it.
So that would seem to be a way, for example, to define centralization in this context means. Boarding in this context usually means no inpatient bed available or at least blah, 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 you know. So I think that's a very point well made. Key principle number three. Should I interpret silence as a general, oh, Dr. Cooper, what do you have to say about
I'm sorry. I don't like the word immature.
Fair enough. We agree.
It's, there are systems that are immature, there's no question about it. But there are systems that are also very immature, or very mature, excuse me, and we have an equally difficult time evaluating performance in some of them as well. You know, there are disease entities for which, you know, quality measures are well defined, et cetera, but there are very mature systems in which there are large numbers of patients for whom quality measures are not defined, and we have a hard time evaluating those systems as well. So I'm not sure what the word is, but I think it's not that immature captures only a part of it.
Maybe a period instead of a comma and dropping the last half of that sentence would suffice. It's difficult.
Yeah. Thank you for those comments. You know, we're sitting here thinking we have so many challenges. Data, integration, thinking of these as integrated units of service within episodes of care across regions, across geographies, it's just going to be difficult. Although I think there may be value for us to identify some things, Art, that we can highlight as either successes or ongoing challenges.
I mean, I think I might say, I might not drop the second half. I might say due to the complexity or something along those lines. I think that's really more to the point. And it's really varying complexity as well. It's tremendous variation, as we all know, and complexity as well. So, but you know this better than I.
No, sir. I just would like to remind everyone, again, here we've got this electronic healthcare record, and we've got this huge movement to integrate electronic healthcare information, yet a key component of our systems here, emergency medical services, is not necessarily mandated in. So it's a challenge.
Yes.
It's hard to have a system without leadership, and it's hard to have leadership without good governance, and good governance really doesn't make any difference without accountability. I'm wondering if there's a way to work in the words accountability and governance into that one.
The only concept I wanted to add to that would be, oh, excuse me. They could also go into item two. You know, one of the challenges we have both in terms of governance and accountability is, and it could go into here, is leadership. And again, I think there are policy implications for that in addition to governance and structure.
Yeah, I would encourage the group to remember when we get to the point, and we're not there in this meeting, but to actually develop measures. It's also issues like validity, interlayer reliability, et cetera. Leadership, you can see it when you see it, but it's awfully hard to quantify or define or measure in a system. Other comments about number three, or shall we move to number four? Number four. If Dr. Martinez was here, he would say, oh, you are here, Dr. Martinez. In the spirit of Dr. Martinez, might we consider, should we, or is it necessary to say, in addition to patient-oriented outcomes, patient-centered processes of care? Or is that a little too popish and over the top? We talk about structure. We talk about outcomes. Do we need to talk about measures that actually reflect the patient's experience? Rhetorical question.
I can give you a perspective, and that is that I think the challenge here, if we get into too many process-oriented components, that we need to maintain credibility, validity, and impact, and probably value to the broader organizations, including CMS.
Some might say NQF has done a very good job of developing process measures. It's the outcome measures that are more of a challenge to those who admire the six-hour pneumonia rule. Dr. Martinez, you had something you wanted to say?
I was going to say, you know, actually, the best presentation I ever went to, I used to be on the board of the Public Health Foundation, but they gave a presentation on patient or customer satisfaction in public health, which I thought was going to be a waste of my time. And it turned out to be really fascinating because they talked about, you know, the way it works is when you look at what you're measuring all these surveys, which is why I hated them, because you're measuring after the fact and you're getting what they experienced. And the question is, what were you trying to give them? And then to do that, you actually have to talk to the patients, right, and see what they need and what they want, a concept that's very foreign to many of us. So, you know, what I like about the movement toward it is that a lot of our systems are set up based upon what's convenient for either the hospital or the physicians or the nurses. We just talked about boarding and everything else. So I really think that if you drive it like STEMI, or our colleagues in surgery did a long time ago, let's just own the patient and do surgery, then you end up with a better system that actually meets the need of what it's supposed to be designed to do. So I'm not so much against saying patient-oriented processes on there as a way to help define that, because I don't think patient-oriented outcomes is pretty vague to me also, I guess, you know. So I leave it for us to discuss. But I think in the end, if you look at even the measures of value, they're going to put 30% of some of the money that's coming out of the pike are based upon patient satisfaction, and that to me is kind of overkill. But the message that's coming down is that we have to design these things based upon what the patient needs and how it works for them. So.
And Kathy? Maybe this is a segue off that, but I think our patients certainly expect their experience to be efficient. And it's amazing, even within my own system, they go from one doctor to the next, to the next, to the next, trying to get something accomplished. So, and it may in the end be effective. It may even be efficacious, but is it efficient? So I don't know if efficiency needs to be worked in there somehow, because the shortest point from A to B is probably the best for the patient, system utilization, et cetera.
Kirkwood, we'll just work up this side of the table. This is the verbal half of the table anyway.
It may be implicit in. Or just understood in within the confines of this group, but I haven't heard the words evidence-based when we talk about performance measures. Yes.
That was one of the points I was going to make, although coming at it from a different angle. The movement, as Rick has pointed out, to look at the world from the patient's perspective is a very important and powerful, you know, tool in our armamentarium to improve quality of care. However, the fact is it's a heck of a lot easier to send a survey to a bunch of folks after their hospitalization than it is to try to figure out, you know, robust outcome measures that are disease specific. In my own system, we face this on a regular basis. You know, department heads are routinely judged on their HCAHPS scores, but not on the actual outcomes of the patients in their departments, because there aren't any robust outcome measures. And I just worry that if we overemphasize the patient-centered component of it, that we'll be missing the outcomes component, just because measuring patient satisfaction is more than a little bit easier.
Can I just make a quick comment back? I know you got a whole table full, but let me just clarify my point. I don't really care about patient satisfaction. Let me say that again, okay? The reason why is because exactly the same. But for the cardiologist, where I used to be the most highly paid secretary in the room, making multiple calls to take care of my STEMI patient, for somebody to say, you know, it's good for the patient, 90 minutes for the cath lab, let's do it. That drove all these systems because it was patient-oriented. See the same thing coming down with sepsis, things like that. So I agree with what you're saying. The outcome, it has to be evidence-based, right?
Brendan.
I don't know if this is the right place for it, but when I think about the patient's perspective, I think about how I go about looking for my health care, and I go about that by fact-finding. And I just don't know how well we arm patients to fact-find. So I'm wondering about transparency, about emergency care resource availability. We've talked now about strategically aligning EMS practices with emergency care or hospital-based emergency care practices, but if I decide to drive in a rural area, my uncle, rural area is a bad example, there are probably fewer facilities, but even in a densely populated area, if I decide to drive my family member to the hospital with their crushing chest pain, I don't have a 12 lead, but I still might want to know where the cath labs are. The idea of consumer-driven healthcare is an important thing, and I don't see, we've talked about before, I've talked to the surgeons a great deal about their decision to be very transparent in what's provided. And what the resources are for a level one versus a level two versus a non-trauma center. We've never decided to do that in emergency care more broadly, and I wonder if it's at least a dialogue that we should be having.
Ron.
I was just going to extend on the earlier comments from Richard, and maybe we could just add at the end of this and accountability to also get towards the oversight requirement also, but to just make it patient-oriented outcomes and accountability to the patient is maybe a way to start integrating that into this process.
Works for me. It also has the virtue of brevity, but it says a lot. Other comments about four? Jesse?
I did kind of disagree a little bit about, you know, not caring about patient satisfaction. And I mean, when it comes to regionalization and moving people for long distances where their family may not have the resources to come visit them in the hospital, I mean, I think that we've got to have something about at least patient preferences and balancing patient outcomes and patient preferences in this in order to be complete.
Other comments? Number five. Here's that accountability word again. Any comments, modifications, observations about principle number five?
Just to the point made earlier about our need for definition and glossary, when I see units of service there, we'll need to make sure that we have an understanding, not just amongst ourselves, but for the consumers who will see that term.
Other comments? Nick.
When I think of accountability, I am thinking of transparency and some way to promote this transparency. So I understand the point being described, but there's not really a mechanism of how it would be accountable or some kind of method or who it would. So I guess is it a point of you send a letter to each of your patients and you say, here's how you rank compared to all my other patients, or is it a website? Is it a website where you direct them to and there's some graphs and charts, or is there a report done annually? Do we send them to Medicare's website, things like that?
That's sort of to Brendan's point. To the consumer so they can choose ahead of time who they're going to go to, or if I'm going to refer a family member in Des Moines, Iowa to somewhere that I don't know anyone up there.
One could imagine system evaluation should promote transparency and shared accountability. I want to ask Chuck, when you talk about back before we define end units of service, what was the purpose of adding end units of service to the statement for the system successes and failures?
So that concept came out of actually a Macy Foundation effort in looking at future research directions in emergency care. And in one of those prescribed papers on new methods to assess the outcomes of emergency care, we borrowed this concept that an emergency department is a unit of service in an episode of care. So if you think of the unit of service being the emergency department in that episode, another unit of service might be the EMS system. Another unit of service might be even community engagement. Another part of that service might be specialty care and consult, and another service might be intensive care unit or surgical care. So I think the key point here is to have shared accountability across these units so they're not done in isolation. So the emergency department's not in isolation, and the EMS system's not in isolation of the rest of the components. So that was the rationale for putting that in there.
Clear to everybody?
Just, do you have an example of where that has ever happened? I mean, not meaning that doesn't mean we shouldn't do it. I'm just wondering, do we have an example of, like, a hospital sharing a bad outcome with the local fire chief?
So, Ron, it's interesting. We actually do. And so one example that comes to mind immediately is one of the American Heart Association criteria for STEMI recognition, and they have an award program where they give a gold, silver, bronze recognition, has moved from door to balloon time to interaction with first provider to balloon time. And so you now get shared credit or shared failure with your EMS system, and I think that's one step at least in terms of a publicly recognized. It's a national recognition program. For those of you who have to interact with this, you'll recognize how challenging that can be, how important a step that was in terms of integrating the two, and I thought it was a nice first step in terms of thinking of episodes of care with real-world examples.
I was going to say, it just might be nice to actually throw that in there because there's not a whole lot that I know of.
Yeah, we agree.
Other comments on this one?
I'd just offer an example. We participate in that program, and it's successful, and our people are excited about it. We also have a program with our trauma team. For lack of a better word, we do an M&M pre-hospital with the trauma group, looking at outcomes and both good and bad. That's pretty unique.
And the idea of shared accountability should not just be limited to outcomes. As I'm listening to you, Chuck, I'm thinking here about this sixth dimension that we've added now at the top. An example of that was mentioned earlier about full transparency of capability, bed capability, that an entire system is fully aware of and can see. We have such a system in our in Maryland, where every hospital can see exactly what bed status is. Every hospital can see what emergency department status is, and has impacted the whole diversion rate thing. But in terms of that dimension at the very top, I forgot what we call the readiness dimension there.
I like your words, Jeff.
The concept that certainly from the out-of-hospital, pre-hospital component into the emergency department component, transparency there is very important. And I think about that when we're talking about this particular principle.
I'm reminded of Christie's next-door neighbor, Alabama. Joe Acker has a system like that that's very much an honor-based system where hospitals voluntarily report to a single office with a desktop PC and a handful of paramedics and a telephone, and it's an honor system, but the CEOs actually meet like quarterly to go over their data, their how often they were on diversion, what were the reasons, et cetera. And his comment to me at the IOM regionalization roundtable were that they keep each other honest. If they sent their number two or number three or number four, it would fall apart. But since the CEOs come and confront one another, everybody plays. It's a one-off system that's unusual, drawn by the commitment of people, but it does reflect shared accountability.
And the impact of leadership.
Shall we move to number six? We're on a roll. Chuck, I'll chime in here for a moment and simply say I struggle a little with the term continually changing structure and process elements. I was thinking, it is an ongoing process, and certain structure or process elements may change or something, just so it doesn't sound quite as amorphous. I would wonder, again, if I were a new person coming into this process, I'd say, then what's the point? If you're going to keep reinventing your terms every few months, you can't really measure tracking. I reflect the fluidity of this, but I think we also have to have a little different sense.
All right. Well, a point well taken.
Other thoughts? Ron, you're smiling like you have something you want to say.
Ron knew I was trying to be as short as I could.
Other comments? Are we beating this group to death? Jesse?
Just the issue of, it says, valid system-level measures. I mean, I think that there may be measures at different levels, so I don't know if we want to box into system-level measures there. Just a thought.
Jesse? Good point. Just for clarification, the reason we put in system-level measures is because we're looking at both the systems component in that second part of the sentence and then coordination between them. So, again, the idea is to get away from isolated units of service-specific measurement. But obviously, there are going to be components within that unit of service that may contribute to the overall system performance. But that's the point, is you're looking at system performance, not unit of service isolated performance.
Other comments or observations about Principle 6? Before we leave this topic, are there other principles or issues not embodied in these six that any of you think are fundamental to our goal of identifying important principles or concepts for quality measurement in regionalized systems of emergency care? Is there something that's not here that we are overlooking, that we've not addressed as we've gone through the discussion of these six principles? Dr. Martinez and then Dr. Pine.
Yeah, just a quick comment. I think this is all great, and I think we're learning a lot. But, I've heard reference to some of the characteristics of or attributes of quality from IOM, and I'm not sure they're reflected here, whether it's timeliness or evidence-based or patient-centered. So we may want to consider at least a point that talks about that, or recognizing those attributes as being part of what the system would provide.
Well, yeah, one of the things that I don't see here is discussion about how the different regionalization efforts may overlap with one another and how they may be complementary or not complementary depending upon the disease area. And I'm not sure if we want to create a new principle around that, but I'm sure that'll be one of the pragmatic issues that come up.
Everybody may read into what they will. I sort of thought that in the statement, regionalization does not equal centralization, that's another dimension of centralization sort of applies everything to one place, and obviously different places could be affected for different things, but I hear what you're saying. Ryan, go ahead. You've grabbed your button, and then we'll go.
I was just going to reinforce that concept because I agree with what you said. I would assume that becomes part of it, but it's such a major problem in this country right now that the regional territories are like walls that no one goes over to integrate care across those boundaries. And maybe more, we need to be explicit in saying that we expect the system to be a national system in the end product, and the regions are going to integrate fully to give optimal care and not have the boundaries that no one can cross.
John?
This discussion took place with Rick Hunt talking about the CDC field triage criteria, and we had a big panel a couple weeks back. A few of you were there. But this concept of a defined trauma system, let me do strike, defined emergency care system, was that there are a lot of places in the country where three or four states come together, like the Quad Cities, and a defined system has to dissolve geopolitical barriers. And so, you know, that was a bright moment in the room when the decision was made to actually put that in print, to say something like that, that a defined system of care dissolves these geopolitical boundaries. And so perhaps that same thought could be incorporated here. A separate comment on this, you were kind of asking for a last call on comments, is I don't think there's a strong enough statement in here about a system requiring enabling legislation and a lead governmental agency and some oversight with command and control and authority to monitor and to make accountable the parties who participate in the system. And I don't think that you have to go overboard with it, but these are really, really good thoughts, and the next question is, well, who's going to do them?
Well, I don't want to parse this issue too finely, and I do want to look back to the NQF staff folks as to what's sort of in scope for NQF and what's out of scope. Clearly, I think that it's my sense that a number of the federal partners in the room and a number of us at this table believe that those issues are important. Whether this process is the vehicle to advance that or not, I don't know. I'd have to ask the NQF folks.
It's a good question. I don't have an answer today on how far we want to push that on that framework, but we've got it down and we'll certainly discuss with Helen. I have seen some frameworks push very hard the need for leadership, so my sense that there is definitely a possibility to emphasize that need.
I'm wondering if we could consider the word population or population health isn't in there anywhere, and I just wonder if we could add to number three something about future medical and regionalized emergency medical care services should try to effectively measure system components and population-level outcomes or something of that nature, as well as the system as a whole. I just think that when we really encourage people to sort of zoom out from their hospital's outcomes, even though we keep saying the word system, I think we might want to be a little bit more explicit and say that we're talking about their catchment area, their population, the community, yeah, would be fine.
Brendan, I think it's a good point. I actually think it might even fit better in number one right up front. If you just said with a goal of improving patient-oriented care outcomes and population health, because you're really talking about outcomes across the population, I think you would get at it. Dr. Kearns, do you consider that a friendly amendment?
I do.
We notice you're getting briefer and briefer, and we appreciate it.
Thanks.
Next, we'll get the monosyllabic grunts, and then we're there. Any other comments or observations on this general topic? Hearing none, I believe that our last item of business, but an important one, is NQF member and public comment. At this point, the hardcore observers in the room have just as much right to search the microphone as those of us who've been wearing them out at the table. And anyone at the table who has an issue that they didn't feel was adequately addressed or commented upon earlier today, that they would like to bring up. This is where oftentimes committees say any new business. So if there are issues that we've not addressed over the course of this conversation, and I particularly want to invite individuals who are either in the audience or listening in on the telephone, Dr. Boyd, this would be a good time to speak up. I want you to tell David I specifically asked him in case he had been on the phone. Yeah. Going once, going twice. Everyone feel at this point that they have been able to express, again, at the risk of beating a dead horse, this is a very high-powered group, and I think we've had a really highly productive discussion today. Chuck's still smiling, sort of. And I think staff have gotten a lot of notes both on their laptops and in recording, but I do want to make sure that given the rigors that everyone went to come to this meeting, that your perspectives and those of your respective disciplines and background have been adequately represented in the discussion up to this point. Obviously, we've got some opportunities to reflect tonight and again, to reengage tomorrow, but I want to make sure we've covered the grounds today. I think there were perhaps some questions you wanted to ask people to mull over. Back to you, Sally.
Okay. We can... sounded like a cricket. Okay. A couple of things as we close out for today. One, we did hand out the packets to each of you for the work group's assignments tomorrow. They are meant to both reflect what we know about your expertise and most some of your recent efforts, as well as still trying to construct a representative work group from the steering committee itself. We attached to our best that we could the relevant component of the framework for the domain that we asked you to look at. So hopefully that will be helpful, and I think it's good for you to have ahead of time an idea of what work group you'll be participating in tomorrow. We're really looking forward to the outcome of that. And then concurrent with us, we're going to have Chuck and Jeff start thinking about the new domain. And they won't have a lot of time to do that, but have a lot of knowledge to pull from. And so we will still take advantage of that time tomorrow to push that sixth domain forward. Some of the things that you may want to think about as we push especially the domains and the subdomains that we've talked about this evening, and feel free to jot these down as you watch the news later on tonight or as you wait for our dinner later tonight, is to think about what has worked as far as measurement and the system or the regionalization so far and what should continue to be supported. So, you know, thinking about examples of successes. What do we have now in terms of measures and platforms or systems? And I'm not talking about the systems that you've identified here, but the systems that allow for measurement that should be encouraged to assess the system. So perhaps the measures are too discrete right now, but potentially could work in the context of regionalization. So in thinking of your experience, are there measures that you think we should, and we don't have to name the measures, but types of measures, process measures, for example, that may be easy to adjust into regionalization or not. and areas that we know require measures that don't have any at all right now. And for those that don't have any at all right now, thinking about why not. Is it the lack of data or the lack of integrated data? We know we have, sometimes we have a lot of data, but it's too fragmented. Is it a certain emerging clinical area, and so it just hasn't had the opportunity for measures to come about, the clinical evidence, what have you, and others. So to not just think about areas where nothing is there, but really start to push this committee to think about why not. What is it in the infrastructure or the point in time in which the regionalization is that has prevented that from coming about? And I think that will take us a long way while we have you all together and getting your reactions and take advantage of the dynamic communication. So I think your homework for tonight is to think about everything that's talked about, think, kind of mentally prepare for your work group tomorrow. We really do want to get as much as we can out of those domains tomorrow so that we can turn another draft around for all of you to react to. And then these questions about the reasons why we don't have measures where we need them, what measures do we have now that could address them, what is working right now and should be encouraged to continue to work. That's it.
Thank you. With that, we will adjourn for the day.
Well, we can close the public comment, but we do want to. I'm going to hand
over. Executive session.
hand over to give us an update on those of you who want to have dinner with your colleagues, et cetera.
Thank you. Just a brief update on dinner that we are actually going to stay in-house, meeting at 5:45 in the lobby for dinner at Bell 20. So. The name of the restaurant in-house.
Just to make sure, for those of you who have planned to come dinner, if you still are now, to let us know, or if you decide not to. M&S Grill wasn't able to sit us all together, so the hotel is able to do that, so we're going to keep it in-house, and so we moved it up to 5:45. Gives you all a chance to go check your email, gather your thoughts, and hopefully we'll see you And will we meet in the lobby or at the hotel? We're at the hotel. We'll meet in the restaurant. Thanks.
Okay. Thanks to all of you. Till tomorrow.
Can we leave paper in here? Can we leave stuff in the room?
Our paper?
You can leave your papers. The door will be locked, but I wouldn't leave your computer.